Welcome to the Coaching Coordinator Podcast. We are at the New York State High School Coaches Association Clinic, and joining me is the offensive coordinator of the University of Buffalo, repeat performer here on the podcast, Andy Kotelnicki. Andy, great to be talking to you here face-to-face. We've done this on phone before, but face-to-face on the podcast.
Well, thanks for being here and supporting New York football, Keith. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you know, just started so far, but had the opportunity to sit in Kyle Flood's clinic talk and talked a little bit of a wide zone. We have to ask him about the four eyes. I just came in on that part, but you know, we're going to talk wide zone here today. And you guys had a lot of success running the football in 2019. Number 10 in the country in rush offense, 250.5 yards per game. And it's, you know, for you guys, it's been a little bit of a dap, because I think, you know, the first time we talked, you guys were throwing the ball over the field maybe more of a balanced offense. And the run game was something that you guys really leaned on this year.
Yeah. Well, I think it starts in, you know, this sounds so rudimentary, but, you know, long, long time ago, probably when I very first started coaching, it was someone said KYP. You know your personnel. Yeah. And we're blessed with some really good running backs and a really good offensive line, and I think you're crazy not to utilize the strength of those guys and, you know, kind of let them have at it.
Yeah, and it was neat to see just how you guys evolved over the course of the season. Like I mentioned before we got on, I had the opportunity to come out and watch spring ball, and, you know, just talking to you guys there and spending that day with you, I know you were looking at a lot of question marks. There was a lot of holes to fill. But it seems like you guys figured some things out this year.
Yeah, you know, and it really came down to, you know, we knew we were going to have some youth in the perimeter that we had to, you know, kind of develop, and they are, you know, really well, I think, as the season went on for us. You know, certainly we were having a lot of success running the ball, but our efficiency in throwing the ball improved greatly. I mean, we, you know, to maybe get back to some more balance, I think, you know, is important. But, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, it really is simple. We try to make it very complicated, I think, sometimes as coaches, but I mean, who are your best players and how are you utilizing them? And if you have to reinvent yourself to give your best players the ball or utilize the strengths of your offensive line, you know, you got to evaluate a little bit maybe what you do holistically in offense, because you have to be multiple enough to any given year, any given week, you know, it's going to change. It's going to evolve, and you have to be able to not have to tweak everything that you do to maybe emphasize a portion of the game, and that was evident with what we were able to do this year.
Well, I think the key word that you've used a couple times already is evolved, right? That if you're going to have consistency on your offense from year to year, it can't be a revolution. It can't be, oh, well, we have this idea and we think it's going to fit better with these guys and we're going to change everything this year. And it wasn't that approach for you guys, because I'm sure, you know, when you look at it, the install was probably very similar to the year before.
Absolutely.
But you just start tailoring it to, and you know, before we got talking, and I've talked about offense this way too, it's like a Lego set, right?
Yeah.
I mean, what does it need to be? All the building blocks. How do they fit together this year? Is it going to be, you know, a race car? Is it going to be a rocket ship? You know, that kind of starts to define itself as camp goes on. You know, you get out of spring ball, going to camp, those things start to define themselves.
I do think, I tell you, Keith, one of the hardest things to do, you know, as a staff, or maybe as even just as a teacher in general, not necessarily just a coach, but just to, you know, really predict that, you know, predict when you play your first game what you really are going to be. And unfortunately, you maybe really don't know until you kind of start taking some live reps versus an opponent. And then, more importantly, kind of try to predict and hypothesize what you're going to look like week 5, you know, and then week 7 and week 8, and how that changes and how you mold and evolve. And, you know, I think, you know, as we talk about those Lego pieces and that Lego bucket, you know, you can't have too much, right? Because then you become a kind of a jack of all trades and a master of none. But you have to have enough so that all of a sudden you're going to have to branch off and build a little more, you know? And I think, you know, a lot of teams have gone through this where maybe a quarterback gets hurt,
right?
You know, and all of a sudden you're this quarterback run team, and your guy got hurt, and all of a sudden you can't do that anymore. What happens to your team? What happens to your offense? Do you have to completely do something different, or do you have enough, you know, that you feel like your guys can execute? And I think it starts with us. For us, you know, as we try to do a really good job as an offensive staff of doing a lot of what we call same as teaching.
Right.
And so that these Legos that we're talking about kind of get pieced together. We're not teaching the offensive line something different. We're just maybe having them do something the same as they normally would do, but now we're adding a read component to it. Or we don't,
right.
You know, or
right.
There is no more read component. Or the guys in the perimeter where, you know, they're still going to run whatever, slants, but Now there's going to be an outside zone RPO with it instead of a quick game drop back. So all same as teaching, I think that's really important for the guys, and when you kind of put together an offensive system, I think it's pretty critical that you do that.
Yeah, and I think you're right. You can't be everything. You do have to start to key in on some certain things. And, you know, you mentioned, what do you look like in game one? What do you look in game five? What does it look like later in the season? You know, for you, as you've looked at that, and, you know, whether it's how you evolve that offense from spring ball into what it looks like in week one or as the season moves on, what provides the consistency as things get tweaked here and there for you?
Well, I do think it starts, first of all, with identifying probably the fundamental skills of every position. You know, I think that's important. And that sounds, like I said, that sounds really elementary and it sounds really 101, but it's important. And if you lose sight of that, that's when you have problems. Like, if you don't, like, as a position coach, identify, here are the fundamental skills of being a receiver or an offensive lineman, and here's how we think that we're going to approach a season. You know, and here, you know, so I'll give you a specific example talking about fundamental skills. How much are you evaluating, like, as a perimeter receiver, getting off of press coverage? Mm-hmm. How much do you see it? Do you evaluate that within, you know, your opponents on a weekly basis? If you see it all the time, then you better make sure you practice it all the time, right? If you think that you're going to be, as we talk about outside zone, let's say, if you think that, you know, 7 out of 10 of your runs are going to be outside zone, your individual drill work needs to reflect that. But again, you have to be careful if you make a wholesale change or a wholesale, you know, sellout to doing that. What happens when all of a sudden you decide, as we just talked, maybe a back really struggles with it and that's not his strength.
Right.
You know, and all of a sudden, maybe he's better at running a counter scheme or a gap scheme. You know, now at the end of the day, kind of what I was saying before, you guys will be what they're trained to be. If you emphasize running 4 verticals, you'll probably be pretty good at running 4 verticals. If you emphasize running slants, you'll be good at running slants. If you emphasize running outside zone or counter or gap or power read or whatever scheme you're trying to do, if you emphasize those things and you make it a core part of your offense, you'll be good at that. But I think it's important, going back to that same as teaching, is that you're not teaching so many different things to your players.
Right, and I look at that and think of install, especially, you know, fall camp. You know, you come back in August and you have the install plan, and you know you're putting in your gap schemes, your zone schemes, etc. That it is about, where do those reps go as you start to move? And it's you know, at the beginning, I think you can always come in and have an idea of what you're going to be and think that this is the starting point, but then you start to see, like, for whatever reason, like our maybe it's a certain offensive lineman and, you know, combo light that you're going to get often, or, you know, guys just footwork, he's more, at ease running this. I mean, I told you, I had a guy who was a really good power runner, but when he ran outside zone, he'd have a whole mile wide and run right in the back of somebody. He just, for whatever reason, couldn't see those things. Now, we didn't give up on it, but it was like, you know, we're going to spend a little bit more time on this. These plays are going to get, you know, we feel we're going to be better at. So it's that constant evaluation. I'm sure, like, during camp, and I can remember, you know, back to the way we would do it, there's just always a ton of film grading, a ton of evaluation. I know, in talking to a lot of guys heading into this year, no one really misses the two-a-days, because yeah. Two-a-days are always a quick turnaround, and you don't get that opportunity to really evaluate before you head back out on the field. It's almost like you're too rushed when there was a two-a-day. But talk a little bit about just that evaluation process and what really then brings some of these plays to the forefront and maybe put some, I don't know if you'd say back burner, but de-emphasize a little bit.
Yeah, I think it starts with, as you mentioned, the installation process of balance, right? And I'm not talking necessarily maybe just run pass balance, although for us we do. You start out installing that way, X number of passes in a team period, X number of runs. But then within your runs, you know, every day, are you making sure that you're getting the appropriate ratio of wide zone versus tight zone versus if you run mid zone or counter or power, you know, are the ratios of those kind of where you want? And we would start with balance and always probably try to progress throughout that through camp. And then as you get into the season, you know, hopefully by the end of camp, you have a good idea or a decent idea of the things that you're doing pretty well. Again, hopefully you've predicted that, you know, right, a little bit to some degree. And, you know, that's easier when you guys have guys returning and stuff like that. But you know, as you get done with camp, hopefully you have a good idea, and then your first game plan should probably reflect that. And then after that game, you immediately reevaluate, did our power scheme work as well as we thought it was going to? Was our A-gap power play as productive as we thought it was going to be all camp? I came up with this term about 8-9 years ago when we were playing a team. Or we weren't playing a team, but we were going through all fall camp, and we were having a ton of success as an offense. And I'm thinking to myself, well, this is great for our offense. And then as the season unfolded, you recognize that you weren't playing very good defense, you know? And then I called that the camouflage of mediocrity.
Right.
And that when you are competing against or executing against mediocrity, you can get a false sense of whatever security about maybe a certain plays or certain schemes. Then all of a sudden, you know, I think if that happens sometimes maybe in preseason games where you go out there, man, look at us run this, whatever, this trap scheme and this wham scheme. We're having so much success with it, or we can run by anybody in the perimeter. And all of a sudden you get into conference play and it's a little bit different,
yeah.
You know? And so
yeah.
you got tricked by, you know, competing against mediocrity every day. And so you have to be careful as you get into depending on who you're playing, of course. You know, a lot of times we play some really, really good teams early in the season. And so, you know, we feel like if we can run whatever outside zone against, you know, a team that's in the college football playoffs, then we feel like we're okay at that. But you know what I mean? Especially as you get into MAC play. But to every week to evaluate it. And we do a thorough self-scout every four games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we always have a post game, you know, kind of up to date, here it comes. But to know every four games, to really, really, are we as efficient, as productive, as explosive at certain plays as we think we are? You know, I remember we all probably have this in our whatever in our coaching history. You know, you call that running back screen the first play of the game and it goes for 60 and a touchdown. You know, and in your mind, you're going, man, we're really good at running back screens. So you call that, you call the next six games, and it just stinks,
yeah.
Right? And then finally, at the end of the year, you do your whole self-scout, and you go, man, we called that play 20 times, and really only had one play that was good. And so when we talk about self-scout and evaluations, to probably try to use some sort of statistical data to support what you're doing and really try to take away maybe any false, you know, perception that you might have about how good it is. Just because in your mind you say, man, we popped that one, you know, for a big play against whoever in that state championship game last year, but you know, this year for the first four games it's been garbage for us.
Yeah, it's almost like sometimes to make sure what that play is really doing, the plays that go really well, you might want to look at them a little bit harder. Why did that play work? Was it, you know, something, a bust on the defense? Do you have a guy on there on your team who's doing something really well? I mean, are we really good at this play? Like the numbers say we are, because the numbers can lie. Our defensive coordinator would always say, statistics are like a bikini. They show you a lot, but not everything.
That's right. Yeah, I say statistics lie and liars use statistics.
Yeah.
Yeah, same thing, right? You know, I it's so funny you say that. You know, when you're having success with the play, what we really try to look for, especially when you watch film, in the details of, are the guys doing and executing things that we're drilling and training them to do? Are we, you know, as we're here, we are talking about outside zone, are we running and reaching and hitting the landmark and pushing it vertical on the front side of the blocks? Is our back on the track? Is he reading the first down lineman outside in the way that we're asking him and training him to do? And when you see that, and when the answer is yes to those things, and those are efficient, good plays or explosive plays, then we got to sell that to the kids and make sure they understand. See, all these drills that we do, all these things, here it is, there it is, showing up, right? Or you don't see those things, and
right.
You just see maybe whatever, something like we got really good running backs, right? So that guy just takes the ball and makes a bunch of guys miss, and, well, that doesn't necessarily make it a great play. Well, it does, but you know what I mean, right? It's not necessarily the kind of clinic film you would show.
Right. Well, number one, I would take that guy anytime.
Yeah,
that guy's going to make
yeah,
you right, right?
Right?
He makes you look like a good coach. But, you know, especially when you think of the younger teams, or for me even going back to, you know, the high school days, it's challenging to get the kids to see on a play that looked really good that everything wasn't right here. But it comes down to coaching those details. Like you said, this is how it relates to the drill. This is how it's supposed to look, and being able to pull all of those back together. So, looking at a scheme that was good for you in 2019, the wide zone, and you know, I started studying zone running game somewhere around 2001, and finally, you know, committed to using it. I think 2004 was like 3 years, because over the 3 years of studying it, I found like, wow, zone is not zone is not zone. There's all kinds of different variation. There's all kinds of different techniques. You know, what you do might not look exactly the same as like an Alabama does or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
So for you, talk to us about, you know, the wide zone play and give us an overview of how you guys coach that up.
Well, I think it would start with why, right? You know, why do we need this in our offense? I think it's probably the only run play that truly can put stress on a defense from front side D-gap to backside D-gap. As you were to look at a cut-up of a team running wide zone, I think you would see the ball hit in all those gaps.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And a pretty good, you know, variation of all those. You know, I think last time I was on the podcast, we talked about distortion.
Yep.
I think the stretch play is a natural play to create a lot of distortion on a defense. You know, we're not really talking about RPOs or anything like that, but to distort defensive players and force them to and challenge them to be gap sound and be in their gaps is that you need to put stress on a defense, and that puts a lot of stress on the defense. I was first exposed to the wide zone when I was coaching at Western Illinois University in the early 2000s. And we had a coach in our staff who had been exposed and was on, I don't know if he was on the staff with the Denver Broncos, late 90s, Terrell Davis, when they were winning the Super Bowl, mm-hmm. John Elway, all those guys, and they were running the stretch play. And Alex Gibbs,
yep.
right? Okay,
yep.
that whole tree of guys, that's where.
I went through
yep.
those,
yeah, absolutely,
those
right?
DVDs
yep.
or
yep.
probably VHS tapes at the time.
Yeah, yeah. No kidding. Yeah. So, you know, that was when I was first exposed to it. And you're like, man, you really see it. If you go back to the first time I was an offensive coordinator, the first year we had like a bunch of really big, giant offensive linemen. We were really going to run an inside zone and ISO schemes. And I'm like, this is great. Well, then you fast forward a year and all those guys graduated. And I remember hearing a coach speak at a clinic about how in the league that he was coaching in, which was the SEC, he said, you know, we don't have a chance to line up against the Alabamas and the Auburns of the world. So we need to be a hi-hat block team. And when he said that, it resonated with me because really when you run and you try to use your athleticism and run the stretch scheme, I mean, you really are – I mean, you're not teaching the kids to play high, but they're running. They're playing higher than
sure.
they would maybe if they came
right.
off and running a gap scheme. And I thought to myself, I said, that's a way for maybe somebody who isn't as big, you know, heavy up front, for them to perhaps maintain a sense of physical run game that in essence is still downhill, but utilizing their speed and athleticism without having to have a specific front. And, you know, like a lot of zone schemes, I think every coach will be able to draw it up versus any front and they expect your kids to block it. That's no different for us. So that's when I was first exposed to it, and then we had just a ton of success, you know, running it, and it's always been part of what we do. I do think, you know, speaking specifically to the play, I mean, that's not all we run. It's only really a third of what our run game is. We just had a lot of success, you know, running it because mm-hmm. we got really good and we kind of checked all those boxes. If it's all you do, the one thing I thought that, you know, maybe you hurt yourself a little bit on is you lose a little bit of that downhill. Let's just fly off the ball and let's be vertical. And let's, you know, go point A to point B, straight downhill. Let's not mess around. Let's not try to run and reach and get pretty, get outside. Let's just get down in it. Like we said before, if you're not training yourself to do those things, then that doesn't come natural to you. And so there was a year or two in there where we kind of struggled in some short yardage situations where I wanted to just get downhill, and we weren't very good at it.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can't lose sight of doing those kind of things. It's just still that downhill play, whatever it might be in your offense, and whether it might be an A-gap power play or an inside zone play or whatever it is, you know, that you can't stop doing those sort of things and certainly not stop emphasizing them just because you feel like you're going to make a commitment to a perimeter run scheme.
Right, right. No, I've been there. I've had those years. I mean, I could think we got good at it. Primarily at the high school level, we were a stretch and inside zone team, and we just made everything, including the first steps on that inside zone play. You know, we would always run it. We wouldn't run that necessarily tight zone at a mm-hmm. shade. We'd like to run it at a three, or if, you know, we were seeing a lot of at the time, defenses would identify themselves as a 5-2, where they'd bring guys up on the line more rather than a 3-4. So we would still stretch that aim point, and, you know, once you start, I mean, you get somebody on the stretch, which for us, we would want to establish a stretch early
mm-hmm.
And get them moving. And they're going to start running, and it's going to help your inside plays a little bit more, I feel. You know, for us, it did in those certain years.
Yeah.
But, you know, coach us through that play. I mean, first of all, you know, running it both to the tight, away from the tight.
Yep. So, yeah, you're running it. It's got to be multiple enough to be able yep. to avoid kind of tendencies. And you know, you're running at the outside leg of the tight end or the ghost tight end, wherever he was at. That would be the running back's track if he was in under center or the pistol. If he's in the gun, he's coming back across flat. You know, he's trying to chase to the front side guard before he does any of the read. He's going to read it outside in, right? He's going to read first down lineman from the whatever, outside in, right? The second read is going to be the second down lineman outside in. And we're basically just going to read if that gentleman's reached or not. If he's reached, we're going to take it all the way outside. If the primary read stays outside, we're going to hit it inside and put our snap our eyes to the second read. And if they're all reached, he's going to stick his foot in the ground and get underneath all of it. You know, I think a lot of people use the terms, you know, bounce, bang, bend. We do too, right?
Yeah.
You know, very similar, however you want to categorize it for your backs. I think it's important. As we evolved in the play, there's a couple of other reads that we wanted to make sure our kids understood. And that was one, what we call a fast flow read. It's where the situation where maybe the offensive line or tight end has your primary or secondary read kind of reached, but they're all just running so fast that you really can't catch them. So you would stick your foot in the ground and you come underneath it. Okay, so you treat fast flow read like you would like they're not reached, right? Mm-hmm. And the second read was a penetration read.
Right.
And anytime
right.
there was any kind of penetration or, you know, the heels of the offensive lineman are getting knocked back, you need to stick your foot in the ground and come underneath it.
Yep.
Because I will say this, way back, like I said, in the early 2000s when I was first hearing Alex Gibbs talk about it, he talked about how that play wasn't a negative play for him.
Right.
I don't have that same experience. I've had plenty of negative plays running the outside zone play. And it was because we didn't spend enough time maybe talking about what happens when there's penetration.
Yeah.
And you have to just stick your foot in the ground and come underneath it.
Yeah, yeah. For us, that was the experience, too. And, you know, I can remember when we first was learning it, learned it from Russ Jakes, who had coached, was coordinator at Wisconsin and was coaching the high school level at a bigger school than us in the area, at Strongsville High School. And I asked him as he was clinicking us, he said, so how do you coach the back? He's like, he doesn't see it, you put the next guy in. I'm like, I got one guy.
Yeah.
One guy who's ready to do this. I don't have that option. So we started studying that stuff and going back through the Gibbs tapes, and we found it to be that really, for us, three scenarios. We, you know, he's reading that track, right? And basically he's kind of looking for where's color starting to show. Because if you see that color, whoever the end man on the line of scrimmage, whether the tight end or the tackle, you see color start popping outside that, you know you're going to cut it up at some point, right? That guy is not going to get him reached if color's starting to show on the outside. It might just be a little, but as soon as you see it, you know, but you can't cut yet. And you know, young kids, especially guys we had struggle with the outside zone play, would see it and want to cut right away. You have to press and still stretch that thing.
We say ride the wave.
Yeah.
Like a surfer, you got to keep riding that wave before you stick your foot in the ground and get north and south. You know, like I said, there's the primary read, like you're saying, he's either outside or inside. You know, then you got to snap your eyes at that second guy, and he's going to be in the same thing, and you can't just see the guy fly outside and immediately come underneath.
Mm-hmm.
Press it, you know, just like you would teach an inside zone play, right? Press it, ride in the wave, same kind of thing.
Exactly.
You know, stay on track, set the backers up, you know, making sure you're getting some movement in those D-tackles. That's a big deal. You know, that's one of the things I've probably spent a little time learning a little bit more about what defenses think stops the play. And they rely on D-tackles a lot to stop the wide zone play.
Yeah.
And it's important that the backs read those things correctly because otherwise the linebackers don't have a chance.
Yeah.
If the D-tackles are getting distorted so poorly or reached so quickly that, you know, guys are on top of them.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so obviously you got it reached, and, you know, I know we used to teach that back, like, just stay on that course. If you're not seeing color show on the outside half, you just stay on your course. And, you know, worst-case scenario, depending where you are in relation to the hash, you're going to run out of bounds somewhere 8 to 12 yards downfield. You know, and you know, the great part is when you start to show them that stuff on film and you have the cut-up for year two of that, that really worked to help us coach up the younger backs. But the penetration, right? Penetration kills the play. I mean, that's the one thing, you know, I learned from Russ, the one thing you'd hear from, you know, Gibbs, and, you know, you can't get penetration on that play. But when you do, you have to understand where
to
you're
do.
Cutting, like you said.
And I would say that applies to really any run scheme. You know, that's why I go back to thinking, talking about make sure you're teaching some physicality and you're getting, is it, other than maybe a draw, when is penetration ever any good? You know, as it applies to any run play.
Right.
You know, and I don't know. Not very many.
No.
You know,
uh-huh.
So you have to defeat that. You know, you got to be aggressive with the guys up front.
The other thing I remember facing early as we coached it was the run through. right? Linebacker run through. And, you know, I it was probably mid-season we had a team, this is the first year running it, you know, figured out that sometimes our uncovered guy get his eyes just outside too quick trying to overtake, and they just be patient and come right off of him and start making the play. So we had to coach then have eyes for the run through, I remember was our coaching point. As you know, we would tell them we want them to eat grass, we want to take away that space, we don't necessarily want them coming up right up the field right now, you know, we want to stretch the play and maybe that guy comes in and let movement sort itself out. But that run through definitely can be problematic on the wide zone.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's so funny because we were just in there listening to Kyle Flood from Alabama talk about their wide zone play, and, you know, and he's absolutely right in the sense that the tempo and the track of your back need to help that a lot too.
Yes.
If you get linemen worried so much about what's happening backside, you know, that you're going to slow them down a little bit and hesitate. And the intent of the play is to front side, go up front door if you can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the intent of the play. Now that we know that if you run it, you know, that's not always what happens.
No.
Matter of fact, it doesn't happen that much
not
at all.
Lot, no.
But you have to get it there if you have that opportunity, because you have to really prevent those guys from happening. You know, a few other things you could do if that happens is toss the ball, or, you know, to get out the front door. Or, you know, it happens the most in gun, you know,
yeah,
I mean, that kind
right.
of stuff. But just make sure you're under center in the pistol to help it get out the front door if those guys are happening.
Because
usually when there's someone's plugging, when a linebacker plugs or tries to back door an uncovered guy, they're going to be short of gap. That guy's really counting on mm-hmm. him penetrating and making the play.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you get good at it, you start to see those scenarios over and over.
Yep.
You're
going
to take care of that. And then you start gashing.
Yep.
They can't cheat you on the play. So it
yep.
is, you know, it's the repetition part.
Yep.
That's a play that you have to rep a lot to get good at.
You do. And I would say this, and that people, sometimes this will happen. People want to dabble in certain things. I think especially it applies to run, well, anything really, in run or pass. If you dabble, it ain't going to look good.
No.
You know what I mean? You can't go to a clinic, watch a guy talk about four verticals, rep it a handful of times, and then expect it to be good. You can't go in there and watch a guy talk about outside zone at a clinic and then, you know, run it a few times. And, you know, I mean, what you do or what you call in a game needs to reflect what you practice. That's what you have to do.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It sounds simple, but that's what it is.
Well, and a lot of it is saying this is going to be our play. And I think as an offensive coordinator, you can't have an ego about it, because sometimes you're wrong about what you thought was going to be play.
Yep.
But that's where, again, as we go back to, like, just being able to evolve and have enough tools in the toolbox that you get to that point where you say, hey, this is right now, this needs to get the most reps for us. Here's how we're going to use some of these other things. And, you know, that, to me, that's an offensive system, right? It's not just a collection of plays. It's how are they going to work together?
That's right.
Because the formations work together, your personnel. I'm sure, you know, the way you throw the ball certainly has to fit
right.
in as well.
Yeah.
As we wind up here, and just a couple other things, and it came up in Kyle Flood's talk when we were sitting in the 4-eye. Right? I mean, primarily all his film was 4-eyes. I'm sure you guys have seen it.
Yeah, we see some
quite
stuff,
a bit.
Yeah.
For you, talk us through, you know, running the wide zone on the 4-eye. How do you like to do it?
Well, like, you know, which you got to make sure that the double team between the front side tackle and guard is occurring. You know, that needs to happen. And then what you're going to say is that you start to put your tight end maybe in an island a little bit more, or you struggle with a force block on the outside.
Right.
It's a lot harder when that 4-eye, if you put that guard on an island, hard to get the ball outside. And that would be our primary read on an outside zone play, is you'd read that guy and you'd say, if that guy's reached, we're going to take that thing all the way outside. Because that's the stress on the defense, is that you would have to, you know, that there's that gap, right, what that guy's asked to do. And so you have to be able to try to get that thing outside if that guy is, you know, being reached by him. So we would you know, we'd count for it where the front side tackle would be working through the outside armpit of the front of the DN, and the backs and the uncovered guard trying to work his nose to the midline or beyond on the 4-eye and try to create distortion that way right away. The challenging thing that you have, I think, especially when you play teams that are jumping the 4-eyes, tight front or whatever people want to call it nowadays,
right,
is what are they doing with the next guy outside?
Right.
And then you get a series of games that you got to worry about, and then all of a sudden you have that tackle worrying about the 4-eye and just working through his outside armpit, and then all of a sudden that outside backer spikes across the tight end's face and goes into that gap. And so you have to be able to find some indicators to help the tight end or whoever might be your third guy over there if you're going to run it to that side. If it's an open side run and you're going to fan all the way out to that guy with the front side tackling guard, you know, people do that. There's some advantages to that. The ball will probably never get outside if that's the case,
right,
you know.
Right.
You got to understand that, you know, without having filmed and we talk about techniques and details and stuff like that, I think still at the end of the day, don't forget where the point of attack of the play is, and that's the front side tight end. And so you want to add some stress on that four eye to, okay, I better stay in this B gap, you know, or because the last thing, and you better do it without getting knocked back, you know. So we want to do a good job of pressing that thing and making sure that linebacker is set up on that front side double team. Mm-hmm. With the running back in the backside.
Yep.
You know, you see it more and more. You know, Kofloes, as they're talking about how the, you know, the SEC is almost all that stuff nowadays.
Right.
I really think that some of that stuff's become popular because I'm talking about the tight front is because so many teams are running inside zone RPOs.
Right.
And
yeah,
people
exactly.
are just gashing them on inside zone schemes and ISO schemes. And of course, if you want to stop some inside zone, put a guy over the center and put two guys in the B gaps, you got a good chance.
Right.
You know what I mean? You really do to stop the play. At least you're going to funnel it to a specific gas. So, you know, you got to be able to run some stretch play into that to complement it.
Yeah, well, and that's, you know, what's interesting is Charlie Coyner and I did a podcast throughout the season where, you know, basically we'd watch a lot of football games on the weekend, all levels, and what are the trends? What are the things we're starting to see? We saw a ton of wide zone this year.
Sure.
Across every conference, across every level, where as the RPO is becoming popular, it was a little bit more inside zone. So again, you know, the pendulum always swings.
No doubt.
With how everybody's going to adjust to the things that become popular. I remember in Homer Smith wrote this great series of manuals. They're just, actually I think he printed them off himself and would send them out, but one of them was called History, and he literally goes through, like, I don't know if it was 30, 40, 50 years of the changes in the game and why. This play started to take hold. You know, I remember him talking about Veer and then what the answer was for the defense. And because that's what the defense answered, this is where the offense has started to evolve. So I think we saw that, you know, and RPO is not going away by any means, or inside zone RPO. But, you know, the tight front was a good answer, right? And the whole design is we want you to have to your guy to run outside where you don't have blockers. You're going to spill it outside. Well, wide zone attacks outside. Now you got blockers out there. So it just makes sense that that would be a great way to evolve.
It does. It is. It's football cyclical, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Say. Well, you guys have some things coming up here. I know spring ball starts soon for you guys.
February 23rd, we're getting going. So it's the earliest we start in a while. I'm kind of pretty excited to try it. It'll be fun.
And I mean, anything else you have available for players or coaches coming up? I know we're starting on a new recruiting cycle. Everybody's kind of in that off-season mode, learning a little bit. I know you guys were great and very hospitable when I came out to Buffalo and visited you guys.
No, we're, you know, as I was telling you before, Keith, I'm so fortunate to coach with the guys I get to because we're all just a bunch of hungry ball coaches, you know what I mean, trying to learn the game and get better. And so when guys want to come and learn and, you know, open our door to them and, you know, sit around and watch film with us, and it's a lot of fun. So we're blessed.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's great to be here at this clinic, and, you know, just seeing coaches out here want to learn ball, and, you know, that's a great thing. I, you know, they all look the same. Couldn't tell you if we were in Ohio, New York, Florida right now. I mean, just guys hungry to learn football, and I appreciate you taking the time.
Well, thanks again for coming to New York and supporting our state conference.